Hey guys, this is Ara editing the upload that you're about to listen to. Before you start listening to it, I just wanted to put it out there that the audio quality on this is going to be very bad because one, I didn't have my usual recording mic. I was using the lapel, as I am now. And two, I recorded this in the bathroom in the most inconvenient time. So just keep all of that in mind. I just didn't want to re-record everything that I recorded because I felt like it was such a good session for me. And if I re-record it, it's just not going to have that same substance that I want to deliver. So bear with me on this one, but rest assured, I will do better in my uploads in the future. It's just that now is a very rocky time for Medcast, and I hope that you guys will be understanding of it. Again, I apologize. We will do better next time. And I just hope you enjoy this episode.
Attending med school can be tough.
It is, as people describe it, one hell of a bullshit ride.
So how do we survive as medical students?
Med talks, med life, med crisis.
Hear it all on Medcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to a new episode of Medcast. This is your host, Ara, with no Karen, unfortunately. This is our first episode, status post Karen leaving Medcast. I know it's sad and I actually feel very lost when it comes to the direction of where I want this show to go to, but today, we're flying solo, and I am actually in my bathroom recording this episode. Actually, I didn't really have any plans on recording just yet, just because I wanted to figure out what I want for this show, like what structure are we going to take on, what topics are we going to talk about. And quite recently, I've just been trying to get a lot of inspiration from different creators, different podcasters, and I chanced upon Emma Chamberlain's podcast, Anything Goes. And I kind of enjoyed listening to her just speak her mind and rant, and it was very surprising for someone who is just in her early 20s to be blurting out these thoughts out in the open. And I feel like I kind of want to do my own version of it just because recently she uploaded an episode where she talked about seasonal depression. And I mentioned in the last episode that I've recently been diagnosed as well with major depressive disorder. And last week, I kind of had a similar, how do you describe it? I had an experience last week where it's, in simple terms, it was a mental breakdown. It was an emotional breakdown, but I knew that it was seasonal depression taking over me. And I want to talk about it right now, completely freestyling this episode, by the way. It wasn't in my plan to record anything in probably like the next 2 months. And I don't have a script, I don't have a flow. I'm just gonna speak my mind. And I tend to go on tangents, mind you. So it's going to be like me calling a friend, right? It's going to be me just speaking out about my experience with having a breakdown last week and kind of relating it to what I'm having to go through as a medical intern right now and what I've had to go through in the field of medicine in the Philippines. So if that's not your thing, you know, I wouldn't even know, you know, you could just skip this episode. You can just look at our other episodes where we talk about more quote unquote meaningful things. And yeah. So I'm gonna start off by kind of like giving a background of how I got inspired recording this particular episode. And it was when I listened to Emma Chamberlain's podcast and she talked about seasonal depression. And seasonal depression, we've actually studied this in medical school. So it's that point in time, or rather, a point in the year, a particular season of the year where, you know, the weather is a bit colder, the sun is setting a bit earlier, it's getting dark very early, like around 5:30 in the afternoon or probably 6. It's super dark already. And it's this time, like this Christmas season, this holiday season, when things just start to plummet and you just feel very sad. Like your feelings of sadness are just heightened. And I want to say that this is what I felt last week, but of course, there are a lot of other factors that played into it. So last week what happened was it was broad daylight. Let me just paint the picture for everyone. It was broad daylight and I was just studying, you know, because I'm preparing for my board exams as well. And actually, I'm going to talk about the recent board exam results after this whole story. So stay tuned for that. But yeah, so I was just studying in my dorm. It was broad daylight. It was like around 11 in the morning. And, you know, I had a groove with studying. I was doing relatively well. Like I wasn't distracted. And then all of a sudden, I couldn't really pinpoint the very thought that led me down a rabbit hole, but it was multiple worries and anxieties that made themselves known out of the blue. Like, bigla ko na lang siyang naisip, bigla ko na lang siyang naramdaman. And I didn't really know where it was coming from. Like, just to give you context, the day prior, I was fine. Like, I was OPD duty the day before, and I was doing well, communicating with patients. I didn't make any mistakes as far as I know. But, you know, I was doing fine. I was doing okay. For a better word for it, I was mentally stable. So this time when all of a sudden I felt anxious, I started to feel very anxious at first, like, what's going on? Like, what's going on with my mind? I don't know where these thoughts are coming from. And then I started to feel sad. And of course, when I started to feel sad, I cried. And I stepped away from my readings for a while and just sat on my bed, looked out the window, and I just bawled my eyes out. Like, I just kept crying. And it somehow turned into like a panic attack. Because there came a point when I couldn't breathe. I was already hyperventilating. And, you know, I was kind of like my fingers, they couldn't stay put. And I just had to keep moving them by way of like scratching my skin or, you know, opening and closing my fists, and I'd pull on my hair. It was such a weird experience for me. Weird meaning, you know, like I felt like I had no control over the situation. And usually my default whenever I would feel sad or whenever I would have attacks like this is I want to die. And my thought, or rather the action that comes to mind when I think about dying, is that I want to hurt myself, but not by way of, like, you know, slashing, like maglalaslas ako, or I'm gonna hang myself. No, what I do is I overdose. And I've overdosed several times on different meds. And it just gets to a point of toxicity, but I'm immediately, like, taken care of, and they solve it. Like, they don't allow the people who take care of me, they don't allow it to, you know, be fatal. And so I've often been told na doctor ka, you should know better. And that's not in, like, a derogatory manner or in, like, a bad and a negative way. I understand where these people are coming from. I understand what they mean when they say na I'm a doctor and I should know better. Like, I should know how these things, you know, pharmacodynamics, pharmacokinetics, I should know about these things. But at that point, when you really want to die and you want everything to just end, it's just all rationality goes out the window and you really just don't care. It's not even a matter of, I know this, I know that. It's, yeah, I know that. That's why I'm doing it. So what I did, I tried to go on, like, a healthy path, right? I'm a person who's undergoing treatment and therapy for my depression. So I should try and avoid all these self-harm thoughts. I should stop being so negative. So what I did was I journaled. And when I journaled, all I could write was, I'm losing it. I feel like I'm losing it. I don't know what to do. I don't know where my head is at, and I don't know why it's happening now of all times. I just felt so lost. And it's a bit helpful. Like, I couldn't say to what extent it actually helps, but putting your thoughts on paper is something that I have found very therapeutic, because it's a different experience when you see your thoughts right in front of you, like written right in front of you. And it's like a validation of sorts. Now you see it, you're like, I'm losing it. I don't know what to do. So after that, went back to my bed, laid down, tried to watch a movie. And whenever I feel sad, I would just put on Studio Ghibli films just because they make me feel better. But at that point, like, I couldn't remove my mind from thinking that I was losing it. Like, what am I doing? You know, the fact that I laid down in my bed and watched a movie. Of course, yes, we all need to take breaks. I understand that. But my thought at the time was, what the hell am I doing? Like, I should be studying. Why am I watching a movie? And if I go back to studying, wala rin akong mapapala. Wala rin papasok sa utak ko. Like, what the hell is wrong with me? Ah. And so what I did was, again, think about overdosing. But again, putting myself back to let's be healthy about this. Let's be rational about this. Let's try to do the right thing right now. So I called my parents. Or rather, I messaged them. And they're the ones who called. The thing about doing that, of course, like, probably someone listening to this show will say, that should be your immediate thought. Like, if you feel overwhelmed about something, then you should try to reach out to someone. And here's the thing. My very first priority when it comes to reaching out to people, like the group of people who I will first and foremost message or call, would be friends, not my parents. And this is why. Whenever I would reach out to my parents, they would always, always begin with, what's wrong? What happened? Anong trigger? And something about this particular experience, I just couldn't pinpoint where it was coming from. I couldn't identify what the trigger was. And so I considered reaching out to my friends, but the people who were in the vicinity of where I lived were either from duty or they were on duty. And I didn't want to be a bother. I didn't want to worry them and be a burden. So I put that off. And next on the list were my friends who weren't in the vicinity, who were far away from me. But majority of those friends of mine have just recently taken the board exam and are feeling very anxious, probably more anxious than I am, and for better reason, because they're waiting for the results. So again, I didn't want to be a bother, didn't want to be a burden. Next on my list was my sister. My brother, I couldn't really open up to him because we've never really shared anything on a personal level. So opening up to him this time would just be weird. So I reached out to my sister, but my sister, I think she had a hearing at that time. My sister's a lawyer. So I think she had a hearing that time. So she wasn't able to respond immediately. So I was like, okay, I'll reach out to my parents. What could go wrong? Like, this is my blood. They would probably not disown me, especially now that they have a better understanding of my feelings and my emotions. I think that they would be understanding. And they were. So I messaged them. I said, I'm having a panic attack. I don't know what to do. I feel so lost. Please call. So after about 5 minutes, my dad called. And as expected, he was like, anong nangyari? What was the trigger? And I really couldn't answer him. Like, I don't know. I had no idea where it was coming from. And maybe, you know, I entertained the possibility that I may be just pushing it down to my subconscious, but it's been a few days since this episode, and up until now, I couldn't figure out what happened and what made me feel sad at that particular time. So, sinabi ko lang na I feel sad, I don't know what to do, I feel like I'm losing it, I'm losing my mind, hindi ako makagalaw, you know, all of these things. I was trying to like paint a picture of where I was and what happened, and then I just kept crying. So I was duty that night. So this was like, this started 11 in the morning, right? And it was already, what, 2 p.m. And I was duty at 7 p.m. And, you know, he asked me, kaya mo ba mag-duty mamaya? And I said, kakayanin ko, pipilitin ko. But my dad was worried because, again, having depression when you're a doctor, or let's just put it in the context of having depression when lives are at stake, is such a difficult disease or like a difficult disorder to carry because lives are at stake. If you make one mistake, then it'll cost you your career. And yeah, I know I'm still an intern. They'll probably be more lenient, but as someone who has presented myself that I'm high functioning, that I'm snappy, I'm stellar, I don't slack, basically. I didn't want to be the one intern on duty who just stares at nothingness and doesn't accomplish anything for that entire shift. Like, I have to do something. I have to be responsible. So my dad said, magpaalam ka na lang muna. I don't want you going on duty at your current state because magkakamali ka pa. Or rather, baka magkamali ka pa. And mahirap na pag magkamali. So what he did after that was ask my brother to pick me up, and then my brother drove me up until a certain point, and then my dad met me at that point, and then we drove home. And on the way home, when I was with my dad, you know, I was still like out of it, right? Like, I wasn't crying anymore because I was so exhausted from crying for, I don't know, 3-4 hours straight. I was so dehydrated. But yeah, I was a zombie, basically. And when we were on our way home and he was driving, he was consoling me, telling me na, tahan na, you're with me now, everything's gonna be okay. And I don't know if it was that or the fact that when I looked outside the window and I saw the clouds and I saw how pretty the sky was, like the sky had this hue between like purple and blue and orange and pink, and it was just so beautiful. And all I could think about was how this would be such a perfect scenery if I wasn't in Metro Manila, if I wasn't in the hospital all the time, if I was probably in the beach or in the mountains, or, you know, even along the expressway, along the highway. Ah, this would be so much more beautiful. And again, going back to my dad consoling me, you know, it's been a long ride. Having my dad get to that point where he really understands my depression and how it works, because usually when I couldn't explain what I was feeling to my dad or rather my mom, they would get really mad at me, and that would just like multiply my depression by like 5 times. So the mere fact that now he understands how to approach me and how to console me is more than enough, and I was really touched by it. So when I got home, my dog welcomed me and was jumping up and down because he's always very excited when we go home because we're barely home. And all I could think about was, it's so nice to feel appreciated and to feel welcomed and loved this way, like how a dog looks at a human. Because in the hospital, when I would greet people, of course, you're expected courtesy, right? Like, so when you encounter or you come across your seniors or senior consultants, etc., you're like, good morning, ma'am, good morning, sir. And very rarely do you get acknowledgement for that greeting. Like, they would just dismiss you as if you were air. They would just ignore you. And that was what I was thinking at the time when my dog was jumping up and down. Like, it feels so nice to be thought of this way, because for so long, for several weeks, I've been greeting people nonstop, good morning, ma'am, good morning, sir, and no one has acknowledged me in even the slightest nod. You know? I feel like that was one thing that was making me feel bad. It was one small thing, of course. Like, it's not... I would feel very pathetic if I was really sad and bawling my eyes out for that reason. But it was one small factor that contributed to why I felt so anxious and so depressed at the time. And so when I got home, my dad made dinner, and he bought a keyboard. And this is something that, this is a gesture that my dad had done, which I never expected out of him, but probably because of how much he's learned about me, about my siblings, and how we are, how we respond now that we're young adults, it was just so heartwarming. So we have a piano at home, and it's been out of tune for the longest time. And pinagtsatsagaan lang siya ng kapatid ko whenever she goes home, because she wants to play the piano as, you know, kind of like her outlet to unwind. And before, when I was in med school, I was kind of like my sister. I go home, sit in front of the piano and play a few pieces, pull out my guitar, play a few pieces. On very rare occasions, put out my violin and play a few pieces. But ever since probably like 3 years ago or 2 years ago, I have not touched any musical instrument. I can't even remember the last time I played on that piano. I can't remember where my violin and my guitar is at. I don't know where they are. So my dad told me that this was a brand new Roland keyboard, by the way, and that's not to brag, but that's just to further drive the point that my dad did this very intently, and he really thought about it, and this is why. So I got home, and he told me there's a new keyboard. Here it is. Open it. You know, open the box and take it out, set it up, and play. And he said, I really bought this because I didn't want you guys to have to play the out-of-tune piano. Sabi niya, ikita mo yung kapatid mo, she's trying to get that certain note, that certain, you know, that piece, that song. And she couldn't play it properly because the piano was out of tune. And that just really struck a chord with me, as in that validated to me that even though my dad, who was born and raised in a very strict household, and not to mention he's also part of the military, you know, he's a military dad, he's very strict, he's very strict. I don't have any other word for it. And he can get kind of, for me, like, it's unreasonable at certain times. And again, for the longest time, my dad did not understand, did not have a comprehension over how depression worked.
Because for him, it wasn't mental toughness, right? It was always resilience. And I think that's a common theme that occurs in the military setting. It's not a matter of mental toughness, it's a matter of resilience. And so this gesture that made me think, oh my God, my dad has a heart. It just really warmed my heart. So all of these things like piled up together, my dad consoling me, me seeing the sky, my dog welcoming me, the warmth of a home-cooked meal, the piano, I mean the keyboard, and sleep. Sleep that was uninterrupted, meaning, you know, I didn't have to sleep trying to think about what I have to do the following day, trying to, you know, push deadlines. It was very comforting for me. And I think in those few hours, of course I missed duty, but in those few hours that I had, quote unquote, to myself, I was content. And so I came back home. I mean, I came back to my dorm the day after, actually the night after. And mind you, one of the things that also made me very happy was coffee that I didn't have to pay for because we have a coffee machine at home, and I just kept making it the day after. And I actually got a groove with studying because I was at a better headspace and I had coffee. But yeah, like all of those things put together just made me very happy, made me very content, and I felt like, okay, it's time to be a big girl again, and we have to go back and go on duty again. And here's what I want to really stress or drive at. I feel like as medical professionals, we don't give ourselves enough time or opportunities to rest and to take a break. And I see it in my brother who is a first year resident. I see it in my residents. I see it in my friends who are also interns, who are also clerks and medical students. I feel like we've built this stigma of we have to work, we have to study, we have to grind, we have to keep going at it. Otherwise, we are going to fail our patients. And to some extent, that's true. Because if you don't study for an exam, if you don't prepare very well for the board exams or for your future as a medical professional, as a doctor, you will fail your patients. And once again, lives are at cost. And you know, I feel like it's such a problematic, I hate to use that word, but it's such a problematic thing or scenario to be in. Like, what are we supposed to do when we are so burnt out, when we absolutely have no idea and feel no control over our own bodies, but we're still expected to show up for work, and we're still expected to treat patients, we're still expected to save lives? What are we supposed to do? And it's a sad thought, honestly. Like, I don't have any answer for this question that I'm posing right now, but it makes me sad because it makes me think, is this just in the Philippines? Is this just in the country that toxic med culture is evident? Or is this also the scenario or the situation in other countries? My friend, Alexa, she's been on the show a couple of times frequentuhang PGI shared to me that she had a friend who took pre-residency. Pre-residency is the period of time when the hospital is kind of like screening you before you actually start official residency. So pre-residency can depend from, it can either be a week, 2 weeks, 2 months. So it depends how long pre-residency is. It's a hospital, it's a case-to-case basis. And so she told me that she had a friend who took pre-residency and was on duty for 36 hours straight. And probably for someone who is a senior of mine, you know, pre-pandemic, has experienced clerkship, internship, and probably residency, that's nothing, right? Like that 36 hours, that's easy. But as time goes on and as situations change, as social media becomes more and more pronounced in our lives, the work ethic, the workload has to change with it. And so he quit after that 36-hour duty. Because imagine, you go on duty for 36 hours and then from kana after, but then you have to go on 36 hours again. Like, where is the fairness in that? Where is, saan mo ipapasok yung rest for that? Like me thinking into my situation, how am I going to, you know, really explain that I couldn't move, I couldn't function? And that's another thing, like mental disorders, especially anxiety and depression, are so not given that much attention. Like, if I didn't show up for work because I was feeling anxious or I was having a depressive episode, it could easily be dismissed as nag-iinarte lang or making excuses. As compared to if I had a medical condition or, you know, I got into an accident where it became surgical, then that's a valid excuse. But how come anxiety and depression are not given that same acknowledgement? How come it's so difficult to try and justify your anxiety and depression? Like when I asked for permission not to go on duty, actually I couldn't even ask for permission, right? Like I was just informing them. Na ma'am, I couldn't go on duty kasi hindi po talaga ako makagalaw. And I would even, like, I would, if I were the senior, I would bat an eye and I would be like, what do you mean you're feeling anxious? What do you mean you couldn't move? What do you mean you couldn't function? You're probably just, you know, making up excuses because you don't want to show up for work. And I really don't want to show up for work because I couldn't function. I need a break. I'm burnt out. Anyway, it just, I don't really know how medical professionals survive in this really, really toxic cycle of being overworked, having an epiphany like, oh, I need to rest, and then putting yourself back into work, and it's just gonna cycle. It's just gonna repeat itself eventually. Like, I know that even though I had this episode and I had it figured out for a day or two, I'm gonna reach a certain point where I'm gonna break down again. And I wouldn't know how to feel about it again. I wouldn't know what to do again. And I'm gonna feel like I'm losing it again. And then I'm gonna want another break for myself. And then after I feel rested, I'm gonna go back. Like, oo, you're allowed to rest. Oo, pahinga ka lang pag napapagod ka. But how do we make it conducive and healthy for everyone? Right? Like, how do we stop and prevent these things from happening? How do we manage burnout? And I know we talked about this in like a few episodes back. We talked about the case of managing burnout, but I have a lot of information that I've garnered in the past couple of months that has really made me question, how are we supposed to solve this? Anyway, that's kind of just the point where I'm driving at. I don't have any answers for it, but yeah. Life goes on, right? Anyway, board exam results have just released, and congratulations to all our newly licensed doctors. But as someone who has a lot of friends who didn't pass, the percentage of passing is like, what, 64%, I think, if I'm not mistaken. So that's a very low percentage. And once again, I feel like that low percentage isn't because our future doctors are dumb. It's not because our future doctors are so lazy that they don't study and they don't prepare for the exams well. Like, no, that's not the reason why. The reason is they're probably burnt out. Simple as that. And just like a reminder, like a friendly reminder, take it or leave it, of course. But if you're trying to console your friends, your family members, your brother, your sister, whoever it may be, when you're trying to console them because they did not pass, it's very important that you give them time to process their failure. And I know this for a fact because I went through a kind of similar failure, which I talked about in an episode before. It's important to just give them time to process it. And you can't really blame them for not answering you or not letting you know how they are, because it's difficult. It's definitely difficult to digest. So just give it time, you know, give them the space that they need to process their failure. And when they're ready to talk about it, just support them through it all. Anyway, that's all I have for right now. I should probably be studying. But if you're kind of on the same boat as me, you can shoot me a message either on our official IG at MedcastPH, on our official Facebook, MedcastPH, or you can just message me directly. You know where to find me. And let me know, by the way, if you're okay with this kind of format. Again, like, I went on a whim here and just decided to record without any script, without any flow, without any direction, just like my life. But yeah, let me know if you enjoy this kind of format, if you find it helpful, or you want a different format, or you want me to experiment with a little more techniques, or, you know, show flows. I don't know what I just said. I'm rambling. This has been Ara, and thank you for supporting our show. Got no voice now. Thank you, everyone. Stay safe, and see you next time. Bye.